Okay, now, since there's not very many of us in this room, we could, in fact, sit a little closer, like in a circle with four chairs or something here. But I think I have to speak into the microphone. I have to speak into the microphone in order to record this?
Yes.
And you want it to be recorded, that's
I'd like to, but you're welcome to the handle mic.
Okay, I'll make you a deal. I'll stay up here if the three of you would, you know, move a little closer, and we'll get a certain amount of intimacy and camaraderie here in our spot. So I'll stand up here and look down at you. I'll just go, right? You don't.
Yeah.
No, okay. The formal format here. My name is Hans Klein. I am the chair of Computer Professionals for Social Responsibility, which is why we put the CPSR webpage up there on the front there. Anybody here? How many of you know of CPSR as an organization? I'm curious. No. EFF, you'd heard of before here, right? How about EPIC? Heard of EPIC? Okay, just checking. Okay, well, there's a bunch of nonprofit organizations that do work around the public interest stuff in internet, on privacy, encryption, protecting anonymity, free, fair use of copyrighted materials and stuff like that. So CPSR is one of them. It's kind of a grassroots group. It's about 20 years old. It's about the oldest public interest group in the field of computers because there was hardly an internet when it was founded. And I have been active in the organization for about 6 years, and I'm currently the chair, and I'm doing most of my work in CPSR around ICANN and domain names and governing the internet. When I'm not doing CPSR work, I'm over at Georgia Tech, where I'm on the School of Public Policies faculty over there. And in fact, I teach a class. This is sort of like a lecture I give a class, so this is kind of like school here. I'm going to switch to this microphone. Good. And shut this one off so the next person will be confounded with it. Okay, so I'm going to talk today. The title given the talk is a little different, this domain name governance kicking the ICANN. I call my talk usually the introductory talk, ICANN and Internet Governance. How many of you have heard of ICANN, Internet Corporation for Signed Names and Numbers? Okay, let's check in here. My talk's going to be in four parts, and if I had the slides, you'd see the four parts on the screen. I'm going to talk a little bit about what is internet governance, sort of public policy for the net. I'll talk, give some background on ICANN. Then I'm going to talk about the domain name system, which is kind of the core of this all. And then I'm going to finish up with a discussion of legitimacy, which is the key issue with ICANN. Is this a really legitimate organization that's increasingly making rules for the internet? So, first thing, internet governance. What do we mean by internet governance? I should say I have a degree in computer science and a degree in political science, and this is the perfect mix of computer science and political science. So we'll start off with what is internet governance, and that's where we get into political science. What's governance? It's a basic question of political science. Governance is making rules and enforcing those rules over a community. So your government governs, right? If you drive down the road speeding, there's rules about that. They apply to you. They can be enforced. But other organizations govern too. The FAA governs the airspace. It makes rules for how you can use the airspace. The World Trade Organization, to a certain extent, makes rules about trade in the trade sector and so on. So there's governance as this general phenomenon of making and enforcing rules. Internet governance is governance in a particular area of our lives and of the world called the internet. So the big picture is there's lots of questions that come up in internet use that are typically regulated in our society and everybody's society. There's things like property. You have something, I want it, can I just take it away from you? Well, no, because there's rules and regulations about property, who owns something, and when you can use it, and when you can't use it, and so on. Well, there's intellectual property. It's a big question on the internet and in other media. So there's a need to set rules for intellectual property in cyberspace. There's questions of speech. Can we say anything we want, or should there be limits on speech, regulations of speech? Should expressions of hate be regulated? Should pornography be regulated? Should expressions of criticism of the government be regulated? Slander about people, saying nasty things about people, can you do it or should that be regulated? There's other governance issues like security. If I let loose a virus on the net, can anybody do that, or are there rules about it and punishments for it and so on? So the internet is we think of it as a kind of world that's different from everything that's ever happened before. And in computer terms, that may be true, but in terms of political science, it's just the latest communications medium, and like most things, there are some questions that come up for regulation. So when we're talking about internet governance, we're talking about things like regulating speech, regulating content, security, intellectual property, and so on. Now, the internet is pretty interesting when it comes to this questions of governance, because it does have some problems that are almost unique. It's an extreme case of difficult governance. And the main problem is it's so global. Globalism is a problem in governance. We all know why the internet is global. You know, whether you're accessing a web page in Japan or the US or Australia or South Africa, doesn't really make any difference, right? And your web page immediately is accessible anywhere around the globe. So the internet's very global. Governance, on the other hand, existing regulatory systems are not global for the most part. Most of them are national. There's a US government which regulates speech and protects speech in a certain part of the world. There's a French government that does the same thing in another part of the world, and another one in another part of the world. So the globe is this big patchwork of different governance organizations, whereas the internet is a seamless web of where everybody's connected. So you get a mismatch between the technology and the governance mechanisms. And you see that in various problems that have come up. You know, this famous Yahoo auction of Nazi memorabilia. Well, it turns out that in one part of the world called France, that sort of thing is illegal. The auctions seem to be happening out of California primarily, in the US, but France says, no, if we can access those websites, then our laws apply, you better stop doing it. And there's been a kind of weird conflict where the French are telling a US company what it can do and what it can't do. Likewise, what was the virus that came out of the Philippines? Melissa came out of the Philippines?
Yes, that was it.
Well, it turns out that's not illegal in the Philippines. Unfortunately, it's a real drag if you're connected to the Philippines, which all of us are, and you get hit with a virus. So people are saying, like, oh, God, how can we make consistent regulations for viruses on the internet so that people have there's some consequences when you do an obnoxious thing like release a virus? And it can be more than obnoxious. I mean, it can be devastating or cost millions of dollars. There is, I think, most people, when you really think about it, the idea of having some rules for the internet is not an outrageous idea, but there are technical difficulties into implementing regulations because there's no authority to make those regulations because there's no global government. So you can kind of think, well, how could we solve this problem? Well, you could say, hey, let's keep the electronic frontier. It's going to be this kind of wild, wild west and anything goes and welcome, but if you get nailed by a virus, it's just your tough luck, right? You know, that's just the way it is out here on the frontier. So that's one sort of possible solution. You could say, we have some pretty good national governments. They seem to work. Let's take one of them and make it the global governor of cyberspace. And the primary candidate for that is the U.S. government, which many people in the U.S. think would be a reasonable solution. It's a less popular solution in other countries. And they say, well, how about if we make France the global governor of cyberspace? And, of course, that's a completely absurd idea that no one in their right mind would ever consider outside of France. And so it goes. So basically everybody thinks that it's a ridiculous idea. So that doesn't fly too well. We could try international governance. Maybe the United Nations could lay down some of the ground rules. But that hasn't been too popular. It was kind of tried and proposed. The U.S. government doesn't like it, and it seems nobody likes it. Or how about you could create a completely new organization that would be a special government of global governance of cyberspace. Try something new and from scratch. And that's kind of what we've seen with ICANN. It is that kind of new, unique organization which has global authority, but just in one sector, the internet. Doesn't regulate telephones, doesn't regulate aircraft safety, but it regulates the internet, but all around the globe. So that's ICANN. That's sort of how we arrive at ICANN, the Internet Corporation for Assigned Names and Numbers. And it's a, let me tell you about it. Minimally, it's a private organization, private corporation, incorporated in California as a 501(c), sort of a nonprofit, like I would guess CARE on the corner is a 501(c), and EFF is a 501(c). It has, and it claims to have, a limited mandate. So people like me who go around saying, hey, you know, ICANN looks a lot like a governance organization. Usually ICANN says, oh, no, 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 we're not doing any, we're not making any rules or not making any regulations. We have a very limited mandate to do technical coordination. That's its claim. Technical coordination. We manage the domain name system, the DNS. And that's all we do. We're a bunch of engineers just kind of like tinkering with the machinery, with the plumbing of the internet. No grand picture here. We're not the United Nations. We're the plumbers making things happen. But there's two problems with that. One is that if you control the plumbing of the internet, it turns out you control the internet. So if you can control domain names to a very significant extent, close to perfect, but not quite there, but to a high extent, you control all users on the internet, and I'll talk about that a little later. So ICANN has the ability to govern through its technical coordination function. And it's even more than that. ICANN really has begun to govern. It has made global rules that are not technical at all, that are public policy rules, mostly about intellectual property. It's one of the first things it did was it started making rules about intellectual property. And rules about intellectual property are generally made by governments, not by technical bodies. So ICANN is kind of this, is emerging as this governance institution for the internet. Now, before, gee, how are we doing on that download on the PowerPoint slide? Just about there. Should be ready just about at the question and answer period. Okay, so that's governance is making and enforcing rules in cyberspace, and ICANN is kind of there. But to really understand ICANN, you got to get a little bit into the technology, because ICANN mixes technology, the internet, and governance and political science questions in a really intricate and interesting way. So let me tell you a little bit about DNS, the domain name system. Domain names. There's two ways of viewing the DNS system. From an engineering point of view, computer science point of view, it's an identifier. It's a unique alphanumeric character string that identifies a host computer on the internet. That's what a domain name is. So cpsr.org, there's only one computer that carries that identifier so that when I go and say I want to communicate with cpsr.org, somewhere out there on the net it's uniquely identified and I know I can be sure who I'm talking to, because it's a unique identifier. Domain name systems from the political science point of view are a little bit different than an identifier. They are what I'd call an essential resource. It's something that nobody can do without. It's like air. If we, as human beings running around here, if we run out of air, we're sunk, right? We suffocate. So if somebody says, I'm just in control of air. You know, life is full of so many things, birds, bees, water, food, gasoline. I'm just the air guy. Nonetheless, if you control the air, you basically, you know, you kind of control the people who depend on you for the air. If you control the oil, if you're OPEC, all it does is control oil. Well, it turns out control of oil is a strategic resource, and everybody depends on it. Well, if you control domain names, then it turns out that pretty much everybody on the internet is relying on a domain name to be identified for themselves and to identify the people they're trying to communicate with. So the domain names aren't everything, but for all intents and purposes, they're good enough to control the whole show if you can control that one essential resource. Furthermore, you got the PowerPoint? Okay, let's. How do I have to sit over there to do the clicking?
Technical view. Oh, we're over there.
I can fast forward it for you.
I'll move over a little. So, good. It's kind of hard. I have to look at the screen, otherwise it's backwards. Okay. So, political view of domain name system is that it's about control, and political science is largely the study of who controls whom. So, just like you could say, computer science is to a certain extent the study of identifiers and addresses, and that's what computers. You know, when you step through memory, you find data and addresses. So the political view of DNS is that it's a system that can be used for control. It's about essential resources. Very important. Not only is it centralized, not only is it essential, but it's centralized. It's all concentrated in one place, unlike air. It turns out, I'm sure if someone could control air, they would, and they'd make us pay for it or something. But air isn't very centralized, so you can't control it. Oil is pretty centralized, so you can create an organization called OPEC to sit on top of the centralized supply and control it. And domain names are very centralized. They're really quite centralized. There is a central domain name system. It's essentially one big database. It's sort of the definitive telephone book for the internet. That's what the domain name system is. And whoever controls that telephone book can decide who gets a listing, who gets to stay in the listing, who gets kicked out of the listing. And if an unlisted domain name on the internet is essentially you're not in cyberspace, at least you're not in the cyberspace that everyone else is using. So it offers a point of control, central point of control over users, and that's the essential part of the technology. So, and I'll tell you a little bit about how internet addressing works with DNS. And if you ever use, I think both Netscape and Internet Explorer, you can see the addressing take place at the bottom of your screen. If you go to a website and type in a URL for a site that you don't visit a whole lot, and therefore it's not cached in your system already, down at the bottom of the screen you'll see that first there's a little message that says, if you go www.cpsr.org, I type it in, I hit enter. Down at the bottom of the screen it's going to say something like, it might say resolving cpsr.org or getting the address of cpsr.org. Essentially, before you can communicate between two computers, you have to do a prior communication between your computer and the central domain name system, which is itself a network of computers, centered in Virginia, the state of Virginia, Washington, near Washington, D.C. And you first have to do name resolution. The user enters a domain name, like a URL. You click on a URL. The computer has to resolve that name and translate the name into a numeric address, because the computers run on numeric addresses. To do that, it interacts with the central DNS, and only after it's interacted does it obtain a numeric IP address, an internet protocol address. And once that transaction has taken place, now your computer can start sending off packets and doing all the neat stuff that the internet does and sending actual communications to the destination address. So it's a two-part communication mechanism. And you know that, you know, since the last 10 years, all we've ever heard was the internet is this great decentralized thing and packet switching and routing, and you can route around nuclear bombs or attempts at censorship are treated like bugs and routed around, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Well, that's true for routing. That's accurate. You know, you can leave those lights on, I think. But everyone neglected that prior step when they were talking about how free and open the internet was. And they neglected the first step, which is everybody, before they do anything, consults a central telephone directory, gets a number, and then does this wonderful decentralized communications. And that prior step is highly centralized. And that's what we've seen. Finally, somebody said, hey, wow, we have a centralized essential resource. Let's take it and run with it and attach some rules to it. So you can use DNS for control. And the key thing here is the key word is contract. Contracts. It turns out contracts are really essential things in our lives. And most of our lives are extremely regulated by contracts. So whenever contracts come up, you know, be aware that this is serious stuff. And lo and behold, to be listed in the DNS, you must sign a contract with ICANN or indirectly with ICANN, with some intermediary. And that's where we bridge the gap. That's the linkage between the domain names, the technology, and the contracts and the regulations, the politics. When you register a domain name, you have to sign a contract. How many of you here have registered a domain name? So I don't know if you read the fine print, but if you read the fine print, it'll say, you know, I promise not to do nasty things and trash my ISP, and I promise I really will pay my bills on time. But often it will say, it must include language that says, I pledge to respect the following rules that have been set by the Internet Corporation for Assigned Names and Numbers. So whether you registered your domain name with register.com, Network Solutions, VeriSign, whoever, every one of them has to include language in that contract that comes from ICANN. So it kind of filters down, because ICANN allows register.com to sell domain names, but register.com has to include the ICANN language in the contract, and then register.com retails it to you, you sign off, and bango, you have now become a regulated internet user. And you just signed off on the rules of cyberspace, and you probably didn't even read the fine print, did you? And you know what? The rules are growing over time, and I believe that the contracts will, as the rules increase, they still apply to you, so you have signed on to some future rules as well. So contracts include regulations, and all hosts are regulated. Every computer on the internet, all the domain names are regulated, because to register that domain name, you had to indirectly or directly go to ICANN. And if you break your word, if you break that contract, not only does ICANN make rules, it has the power to make rules, it has the power to enforce the rules. So what happens if you don't uphold the rules and the regulations of cyberspace? You are delisted from the DNS. You lose your domain name. And bango, you're essentially delisted from the phone book. And since cyberspace is nothing other than this information space, once you're not in the phone book, you don't really exist anymore. It's essentially expulsion. So it's kind of severe, but on the other hand, it's not that bad. You're not thrown in jail, you're not, you know, hung, nothing like that, but you are just, you're kicked out of cyberspace. That's the enforcement mechanism. Sorry, I have to figure out how to do this thing. Okay, we'll just shut it off. Which makes additional noise. Okay, I'll take a question while my phone goes dead. Yes? You'll get recorded this way. You have to switch it on, maybe?
Yes, that did it. I would take issue with your statements regarding the capacity of ICANN to...
Killer loud. I'll repeat the question.
IP space, who never even bothered to register anything. They don't need to. There is no effective prosecution against them. ICANN, compared to how the net used to work in the earlier days of VeriSign as a government contractor of domain registrations, is just a bunch of bureaucratic pain in the ass. I don't see them buying us much.
Okay, one thing is, you're making an important point, which is the control mechanism is control over domain names. So there are certain behaviors in cyberspace that do not lend themselves to regulation through domain names. Spam is a great example, right? You can just bounce around and do your spam from a different domain name, and big deal, if they close down that domain name, you go to another one. It's a little bit better for for websites that are that want to be known about. I'll tell you who's real. Actually, some of the most vulnerable people to domain name registration are firms like Yahoo.com. You know, the value for Yahoo of being listed at Yahoo.com is enormous, and people have made the point that it's a great control of domain names is a very good mechanism for taxation. If you want to tax companies who have web presences, they can't get up and leave the way spammers can get up and leave. That's a little bit the nature of the world of regulation. When we drive on the highway, we're regulated by driver's licenses. Well, it turns out there's tens of thousands of people driving without their driver's license. Regulation is a pretty imperfect thing, and that the same thing holds for regulation by use of domain names. But generally, for most users who really are attached to a domain name for longer periods of time, it is pretty effective. And I would guess that most of us don't change our, aside from spammers who intentionally change their email address all the time, most of us are pretty linked to our email address. And if we'd change it to escape, then a lot of our friends would lose us.
Just to generalize then what you've said, the people against whom strong enforcement is necessary are completely immune to ICANN's enforcement powers. The people who are generally going to try to be good citizens anyway and would be subject to the enforcement powers never will actually fall under them because they won't do anything that bad.
No, there's lots of regulation that applies to this, and it is an imperfect mechanism, but there's plenty of regulation that happens. Intellectual property and domain names is so far one of the biggest ones. So, yeah, another quick question, then I can continue.
Well, that's not so much a question, but a comment. Excuse me. Not so much a question, but a comment about the fact that in this discussion, it's the legitimate enterprises that are most endangered by regulation in terms of being able to control what they can produce and what they can do. So in terms of, a domain name being a central point, a marketing point, then you need, the fact that there are regulations mean that right now there's no real sense of you cannot sell glassware. There's no ridiculous regulations on that regard. Mm-hmm. But if you have a central committee saying this is right, this is wrong, then eventually legitimate enterprises will be affected. And as it goes on and on and on, depending on how much bloat we're talking about in terms of regulation. Because if you can regulate, you will. Or you will try to take power, and power is politics, and whatever country is going to try to find their power, they're going to take.
Yeah. Well, let me give an example. Let's say even with the case of a spammer, right now it's I have an account on Yahoo. It's quite easy for me to have an account on Yahoo, and Yahoo already implemented some rules to prevent spammers, but you could make a rule for Yahoo that Yahoo has to keep track of who all of its user base as well, and that when there's been a problem with a Yahoo user, Yahoo has to come forward with the identity of the user. And that would be a way of reducing anonymity on the net, so that ICANN could make pass a regulation that would affect a domain name holder like Yahoo, and Yahoo in turn would enforce that with its users. Or you might have to show your driver's license or really give proof of who you are in order to register with Yahoo. And and ICANN could leverage its domain names to do that with Yahoo. So through various mechanisms you can actually influence you make the domain name holders your enforcer. Just in your place.
Well, to an extent, that's already happened with ISPs because ISPs are going to be the soul of any user. So if you can tell an ISP that they cannot do this and then they are going to succumb under the weight, then that's affected to the users. If you have no means of connection, then whatever regulations has been put upon your connection floats down. And I can't really think of any particular examples, but I know I've heard of issues just of companies, doing whatever kind of, if you're going to have pirated software or whatever, of putting pressure on the ISP, be it legal or not, to force some kind of thing off the user. And so if you go back to the regulation of the fact that, if this says to the ISP that we can take away your IP addresses, then I have power. Mm-hmm. And so that's who holds the power.
Okay, let me continue with the talk, and then that's good. I mean, we'll have more discussion at the end, too. So all hosts are regulated, and then the question is, can you find creative ways to, if you regulate a host, to regulate a user? That's the issue that comes up in a lot of this. Okay, let's look at ICANN itself. As I said before, DNS is controlled by ICANN. It was recognized that the entire internet has certain core technical resources that must be managed centrally in order for an integrated network or integrated network of networks to work. And the most important thing is the namespace, that everybody, if we're going to be able to communicate with each other, the entire user base, everybody who has an address, your address must be, on the one hand, unique, so that email sent to that address just goes to one place. And secondly, all addresses must coexist in a single address space so that when I send email to you, not only does it go to just you, it actually goes to you. You're not in a separate island of address space over here that's not linked. So you need one coherent and unique listing of addresses in order to have the whole network and internetwork concept work. And to have that unique central address space, you need a central overseer and manager of addresses who hands them out and only hands out one at a time and makes sure that they're all there together. So the technical design of the internet includes a need for a central coordinator to hand out addresses. That was operated relatively informally for a number of years. The main authority, it was called the IANA, the Internet Assigned Numbers Authority. It was the IANA was basically two people, the most famous of whom was John Postel. You know, how many people know the name John Postel? He was sort of one of the original crew there working with the other folks, founder of the Internet Society and so on. And he kept track of domain names. But it was a relatively informal system, and as the internet became more and more important, its usage grew, millions of dollars came to be at stake on the technology. You still had this guy out in Southern California who was the main authority for making rules over names, and there was a concern that, hey, we've got to make this a little bit more formal as an institution. So there was an attempt made to create a formal body to do internet, to manage the domain name system. And that led in 1998 to the creation of ICANN, which is that institution to manage and oversee the domain name systems. And ICANN oversees, it manages the domain names, it oversees registries. We as users interact more with the registries than directly with ICANN. So Network Solutions, VeriSign, Registered.com, and so those organizations that interface with users are under the authority of ICANN. Likewise, the country code domain names, .uk, .jp, .de, and so on, they're under the authority of ICANN. So there's kind of this hierarchy of registries, just like there's a hierarchy of domain names, and at the top of the DNS system you find ICANN. And the contracts and the rules of domain names flow down to users, exactly as we talked about. And most of us, any of us who have registered a domain name have signed onto those contracts. So some of the regulations to date. The first regulation that ICANN passed had to do with intellectual property protection, and ICANN set global rules for intellectual property protection in domain names. And it was in a policy called the UDRP, the Uniform Dispute Resolution Policy. Can you guys, I'm sorry, can you not talk, kind of keep thinking? The UDRP sets rules for who can use what words in domain name character strings. The character string Coca-Cola.com or the character string Apple.com, from a computer science point of view, as long as there's just one Coca-Cola.com, then it works perfectly well. It identifies a host computer somewhere in the network, and that's it. Fine, you've got an identifier. But from the point of view of internet use and e-commerce, the use of trademarks in domain names is there's many more rules than just whether or not it works as an address identifier. There's ownership of words, and there are rules about who owns words and who can use words. And there are a lot of disputes, as you probably heard in ICANN, a lot of disputes around the internet in terms of what's been called cyber squatting and grabbing a valuable name, registering it so that you have the right to use it, and then somebody else wants it or it's their trademark, and then you get into fights over it. Well, the problem is that there's no global law to handle such disputes. There is no global law for trademarks. And the reason is because there's no global authority. It takes us back to the old governance question and the fact that at the global level, we don't have a government, so we don't have global rules. We don't have global public policy. However, ICANN immediately upon its creation made some rules for resolving those disputes and saying who owns trademarks, who can use them. If you've registered a domain name that should be somebody else's property, it can be taken away from you, and here's the procedure for evaluating it and possibly taking it away, and so on. And there's been hundreds of enforcements of this. So you've seen, we have seen already some of the first regulations being made by ICANN. Now, the idea here is that ICANN has made regulations. Is it bad public policy, this global public policy by ICANN? That's the second question. The first question is it even making public policy? And the answer there is yes. And the second question, is it good or bad? That's not even a question that I really address here. It's an ongoing debate as to whether it's good or bad. But the more significant thing is that it's been done, that ICANN is making global public policy. Therefore, the concern for a lot of parties is that there's more in the pipeline and more to come. Additional regulations, ICANN gets into competition policy in terms of how many new top-level domains will be created, which companies are allowed to create them, how much they're allowed to charge for them, and so on. It's a bit like a big utility. ICANN is kind of like a global utility commission that sets prices for domain names, that decides who gets accredited, who's allowed to resell them, and so on. It's a bit like the electric company or the former, Ma Bell, the national phone company, right? One overseer for the entire phone network, one overseer for the entire internet network. It can be kind of bureaucratic and slow. You've seen a certain amount of bureaucracy taking place now in the creation of domain names, and there's a lot of demand for new domain names, and yet it kind of advances at a snail's pace because you have a central bureaucracy making decisions there. So this is another area of regulation in competition policy. Again, is it good or bad? I'm not going to get into that too much here. The crucial thing is it's making global public policy. Now, the biggest concern is more the future than the present. The biggest concern is mission creep. Once you've got a central governance institution, then it can grow into the future. Because it's clear that it has power over users because it controls a central resource. Its mission is fairly ambiguous and changes over time. In the 2 years that it's been in existence, it's shown a willingness to rewrite its own bylaws and kind of change its direction, change the kinds of activities that it undertakes. And therefore, there's a concern more for the future than for the present, that it will engage in new regulatory activities in the future. So, to summarize so far, you've got a body in place that has the controls, essential resources, that can make rules and enforce them for internet usage, and that has already begun to make rules and enforce them for internet usage, although in relatively small ways. So you do have a governance institution in place. So the key question, one of the biggest questions that follows, is legitimacy. Who is this governing institution? Who's making the rules? And what gives them the right to exercise the kind of power that's in that organization? So who governs the organization that in turn governs the internet? And at the top of of ICANN is a board of directors who has responsibility for making policy for the organization. And according to its bylaws and the way the corporation is set up, it's about a half and half board. It's about half industry experts who sit up there and call the shots. And the other half, according to the bylaws, are representatives of users. So you have industry has a voice, users have a voice, a certain amount of balance in the system, a certain amount of balance of interests as well. So it's accountable to the people who have the greatest stake in the continued in the issues of the internet governance. However, this balance of interest exists largely in theory. In practice, it's been a little bit different. And you have to look at the origins of ICANN to appreciate this. Way back at the beginning, I said ICANN was created in 1998, but the attempts to create some formal organization to manage the DNS, they date back to 1994, and it was about a four-year convoluted process that led up to the creation of ICANN. And originally, it was the industry people and the technical expert people who had proposed an organization. And their original vision was that it should have a board of directors that's pretty much all industry people and technical experts, that was the right group to oversee the DNS. Well, a little later in the process, the users and various organizations with user that have some claim to represent users made counterproposals and said, hey, you know, we shouldn't place these core resources just in the hands of the research community and the industry. Users need a voice too. Why don't we make a DNS management organization where the board is all users, and then it will be responsive to users and it won't pass bad regulations and so on. Well, the U.S. government, which had initiated this kind of process to design an ICANN organization, the U.S. government took these two proposals and put them together, and it said, okay, we've been talking about this for years. Here's the last word. We're going to create an organization. We're going to call it ICANN, and half its board will be industry and experts, and half its board will be users, and that's going to give us kind of balanced government. And that will be legitimate, so that when it makes rules, we'll be comfortable with that because it's accountable to the key stakeholders. Well, that was around 1998. They wrote the bylaws. They put it in place. But you couldn't get user representation overnight because there had to be some kind of election mechanism. So there was an initial board that was put in place to kind of get things up and running. And that initial board, lo and behold, had no user representatives. It was only the industry and the expert side that had people sitting on the board of directors calling the shots. The implementation of the user side was delayed a little bit. So the initial board had no users, and yet, even though it hadn't quite got all its structures in place, it immediately began making policy. It started policy making, and it passed that UDRP, which regulates intellectual property. So you had a kind of the cart getting ahead of the horse a little bit. You had an immediate action in making public policy before you'd settled the question of legitimacy and giving all the concerned stakeholders a seat on the board. And it didn't stop there, however. The next thing was when it came time for user elections, again, you had the industry folks on the initial board who had to organize the elections, and they said, well, you know, these elections, we've never done it before. Let's not rush into this. Maybe we should only elect 5 of the 9 people. There's 9 of us industry types on the board. In theory, we're supposed to have 9 user types elected on the board, but let's be cautious. Let's not elect all 9. Let's reduce their number just down to 5. So you had a rather half-constrained election that took place in year 2000, and just 5 instead of 9 seats were even open for election. And what happened then is there was a lot of dissatisfaction with ICANN. There was a widespread concern. So you had a lot of candidates who ran for the board of directors who said, elect me, I'll reform the organization, I'll make it more open, I'll make it more accountable, and so on. And it tended to be the most vociferous reformers who were elected, at least in some of the regions. There were 5 regions around the globe that had elections. North America and Europe elected the most outspoken critics around. So from one point of view, you could say, hey, the elections worked because the organization was headed off in one direction. You had an election, and you got some critics on the board, and they're trying to push it back on another direction. From the point of view of the industry and user reps, the fact that critics were elected to the board was a clear sign that elections were a terrible idea, that they never should have been attempted in the first place, that clearly the system, if the system would lead to this kind of person being on the board, then the system, maybe it's a bad system. So they initiated a reconsideration of user representation altogether, a so-called clean sheet study where again, the whole idea of user representation is being reexamined and may well be one possibility is to just do away with it and get rid of the user reps altogether. That clean sheet study is taking place right now and is supposed to deliver a final report in November that will be presented. It's an outside body. It'll be presented to the ICANN board. So we're all wondering whether user representation in ICANN will survive this at all. Next week, about 2 days ago, their initial proposal for reforming the board of directors was released, and they further pushed down the number of user representatives. They proposed a reduction of user representation, not an elimination, but a reduction. But this game is kind of in play even now. And the big question is, will user representation on this governing institution survive or not? I talked a little bit about this. We did have, we saw in the year 2000, when just five seats were open for election, it was quite a fascinating process. Did anybody here vote in the ICANN elections in the year 2000? Anybody here register or vote in them? Was anybody here aware that there were elections being held in cyberspace? A few folks out there. Uh-huh. Okay. It was at least about 170,000 people around the world heard, because that was the number of initial attempts to register to become a voter. In order to be qualified as a voter, you had to have an email address. You had to have a snail mail address, so that you register online, you get a PIN sent to you, then you go back to the website, enter your PIN, and you can vote. Those are the rules. 170,000 people responded initially. I think something like 70,000 PINs could actually be mailed out because they weren't garbled, and about 35,000 people actually voted. It was the first elections in cyberspace that were held then. And as I said before, a reform community arises. There were candidates that came up. There were lots of debates. And there were claims that ICANN was captured by industry. That came up quite a bit. And the people who were saying those kinds of things tended to be the people who were elected. And the results, as I noted, was that in two of the regions, U.S. and Europe, the reformers won. In the three other regions, it was a more mixed bag. And it kind of elicited this whole question of should elections be done away with at all. So today, the battle or the question is open, the battle continues. There are proposals being made to change the composition of the board. There are proposals to reduce user representation. And we're going to see how this plays out. The decision should happen sometime between November and March or November and June of the next year. And I am working to try to organize a petition drive, an online petition drive, and that will hopefully appear in the next weeks or possibly month, which would be a petition to preserve user representation in ICANN and try to get a lot of people to speak out and make their voice heard, that they don't want user representation eliminated, that if there's going to be an organization with governance abilities, that it should be accountable to internet users from around the world. For more information on this, I'll leave you with two URLs. One is, didn't come out too well, is ICANNWatch.org, www.ICANNWatch.org. It's a set of people who have been writing analyses and putting information up about ICANN. And the other one is CivSoc.org. That's the organization that I'm, the project that I do within CPSR.org. And in fact, I think we can probably pull it up here. At CPSR.org, if you scroll down a little bit, where is it? Internet governance is right here. The Civil Society Democracy Project. That's CivSoc. Civil Society Democracy Project opens up on a whole lot of resources of what's going on around ICANN. And this is one of the most active sites in the ICANN debate, the other one being ICANN Watch. Okay, we've got, it's almost, time is almost up, and we started to get going a little bit in the discussion, and I'll open it for any questions that people have now. Yeah?
I registered all my domains before 1998. How does ICANN claim, you know, I mean, am I still under the regulation even though I did not sign, you know?
Right. I think, I'm not quite sure on the details, but you've had to renew those. Your registration only lasts 2 years, so sooner or later you will have to re-sign.
There you go. Okay. Now I understand.
And in fact, it's been 2 years since ICANN was created, so by now everyone's had to re-register since the creation of ICANN. Yeah?
It most definitely does say that you are bound by any future rules that they make up in their little heads for any time in the future.
You've seen that language in there.
Yeah, I just re-registered like 2 weeks ago, and I read it thoroughly, and that's exactly what it said.
Mm-hmm. Now, there's some questions as to whether they can, if you can sign a sort of blank check like that. But what happens is if you sign a contract that says, I will do whatever I'm told to do in the future, and then in the future a rule is passed and you break the rule, then ICANN can enforce that by taking away your domain name, and then you say, well, you know, that's unfair. Who do I appeal to? And it's a little bit, you would have to then take it to the courts in a U.S. court.
But those precedents already exist with financial institutions. All they have to do is tell you 30 days ahead of time, they can do absolutely anything they want to you. And so ICANN's very well covered with precedents set worldwide and with big business. That all they have to do is give you 30 days warning. You can always opt out. You can always ask them, hey, I don't want a domain name under those rules. So that's what they're going to play. Mm-hmm. And as long as they're they can spend the money on lawyers and you can't, they win.
Now let me say one thing about ICANN, and that is the point I made a little bit. Is this good policy or is this bad policy? I think that ICANN, you know, it passed rules for the protection of domain names and intellectual property. In fact, ICANN's rules for the protection of intellectual property were friendlier to computer users than the similar law passed by the U.S. government, which was one of those pass-it-in-the-dead-of-night lobbyists write the bill, the Anti-Cybersquatting Act. So I don't want to say that ICANN is this big evil thing out there that's trying to take over your life. But what I do say is that ICANN does have the ability to make rules and enforce them, and it's not, in my opinion, it is not a fully legitimate organization. It has resisted becoming fully accountable. So it's more like you've got the potential for bad things to happen in the future, and it's today those issues are being settled as to who's going to be on the board of directors to keep it accountable. Yes, and then yes.
Since it is on U.S. soil, can't it be affected by U.S. laws and effectively have the U.S. government control it if it chooses to?
Good question. Actually, there's a slight detail that I didn't mention before, which in some ways trumps everything I've said, and that is that the United States government U.S. government had original authority over the domain name system. It made a commitment to create ICANN, which would manage the DNS. And once ICANN was up and running, the U.S. government would sever its authority over the DNS and give it to ICANN and wash its hands of the whole affair. The U.S. government still has not done that, and it has waffled a little bit onto whether or not it will do that. So ultimately, anything ICANN does can still be vetoed by the U.S. government, and ICANN has not yet become a totally autonomous organization. The claim is that it will become an autonomous organization, and in fact, even so far, the U.S. government has kind of had a hands-off policy. But currently, yes, the U.S. has authority over it. The U.S. also said the root server of the DNS must never leave U.S. soil. That gets back to your point.
And even then, they could pass new laws that will affect it.
What's that?
I mean, even if they did sever it, they could always, as they are on U.S. soil, to make new laws to regulate it, but maybe not name them specifically.
Right. Well, as long as the server is on U.S. soil, then the old-fashioned jurisdiction applies, right? The U.S. government controls the territory, so you keep the server.
Even if they sever, they'll never actually lose control of it.
Well, if they move the server elsewhere, then that would do it. There was an attempt to move it to Geneva, Switzerland, and the U.S. government said absolutely not. Maybe this will perhaps be our last question.
As an additional indication of the imbalance and perhaps illegitimacy of ICANN since I've been involved with the Internet since 1986, and I've watched all of this from the beginning to the end. One of the rules that ICANN put into place, which is, from the privacy advocate's perspective, a distinct loss compared to how things ran under the VeriSign contract, excuse me, the Network Solutions contract, is that any registrar absolutely must, under the ICANN rules, make all registry data, and I mean data to the point of personal identification, available for commercial abuse. I mean use. I was going to say abuse. The ICANN rules say, really, you're not supposed to abuse this data. But the way the rules are written, the registrar's hands are tied, and they can't do anything about it. When ICANN became real, and I registered a new domain or re-registered one, immediately, in less than 2 business weeks, I started getting a flood of commercial solicitations that came in absolutely because my information was published in a registry. I had had a domain for 4 or 5 years before that, and 1 or 2 things would come in now and then from people who violated Network Solutions' much more stringent policy about not stealing the registration database for commercial purposes. ICANN is not my friend.
You know why that is publicly available. I can tell you the interest that lies behind that is that the trademark and intellectual property community, who are one of the sort of that 800-pound gorilla in ICANN's playground, they want to always know who has registered a domain name because they need that to enforce their trademarks.
Nobody is suggesting at all that anybody be able to have ultimate anonymity. I'm stating that the way ICANN's rules are written, the data has to be easily, commercially acceptable. That's the difference. Network Solutions, when it was running this by government fiat, always made the data available when any kind of dispute or legal action came up, and in any reasonable system that anyone might propose, that would remain true. What ICANN has done is made it much, much easier to abuse and has put into terms that you have no choice but to sign if you wish to play the internet game. Goodbye, privacy. Goodbye, empty mailbox. Go ahead, screw me.
On that cheery note, shall we? 2 more questions. Okay, great. And we saw a few hands.
What he just said, though? That right now is a really big deal, and they're really arguing, and they're really fighting over that. Should your driver's license information is public information, should it be available online? The fact you own a home, that's public information. I can walk down to the assessor's office and look up every single thing about you. I can find out if you have a mortgage. I can find out if you paid for the house entirely. And they're arguing over whether or not that is public information. There's no argument about the fact it's public information. Should it be available to the world on the internet's the question. ICANN said, if you register a domain name, that's public information, and yes, we are going to make it available. It was their choice, and that's what you want to complain about.
Other questions? Last question. Let me see if I can think of a question. Okay, let me think. I would say that you people, like all of us in this room, have still an opportunity to influence how ICANN develops. In particular, this question of retaining user representation on the board, where it's half user reps and half experts and industry people. That's going to be settled soon, and I would say keep an eye out for petition that'll come up where you can sign on and make your voice heard. Maybe the best place to do that is on the Civil Society Democracy Project, the CivSoc of CPSR. There is, like I said, this is still in the works, so we haven't got it up yet. They'll either keep an eye out for it, or you can go to, if you read through it, there's a newsletter called the Cyber Federalist Newsletter over here. And this is a newsletter that I've been writing sort of infrequently, but it gives information. And you can subscribe to this. And if you subscribe to this, that'll pretty much guarantee that you will that you'll stay informed and hear about the issues. So this is a place to make sure you'll be informed when the petition gets running, although hopefully it'll come across your inbox even if you don't subscribe to this. Okay, thank you very much for attending, and keep tracking these issues, and it affects you, and I hope you can affect it right back. Thank you. Bye.
Yes.